When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. Real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary, discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now. This is Star Talk. Neil deGrasse Tyson here, your personal astrophysicist. I got with me my co-host, Chuck. Chuck, always good to have you there, man.
Always a pleasure to be here, Neil.
You bring a force of levity to all content that has gravity on this program.
Even when you talk comedy, you still do it in science terms. The terms are still astrophysical when you're talking about.
Well, I think the universe is hilarious, so that's why. Okay. So today's topic are science pioneers.
Ooh.
Science pioneers.
Always
we don't do this
good.
As often as we should.
It's always a good topic.
Because all kinds of scientists out there that might not have made headlines,
right,
but they're there and they're getting the job done.
Let me ask you this as a scientist.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's better to be on the cutting edge and risk being ahead of your time, or to be in the sweet spot and perhaps either prove or make the big discovery?
Both. Why you got to make everything binary, Chuck? We live in a spectrum world. Well, anyway, we've got a guest today who has some expertise in finding scientists who are pioneers and are worth talking about. And we've got Danny Washington. Danny, welcome to Star Talk.
Thank you very much. Hey, what's up? It's so good to be here. I'm really excited. I've been looking forward to this for a very long time.
Excellent. And you'd reminded me we had met several years ago. You had attended a live recording of Star Talk at the American Museum of Natural History under the sphere of the Hayden Planetarium.
Sure,
so it's
did.
Great to have you sort of back in the fold.
Yeah, totally full circle.
You've been busy the last few years. And first, you've got a podcast called the Genius Generation Podcast. Mm. And I'm guessing it's not my generation who messed up the earth.
No, not quite. It's definitely not your generation, and it's not even my generation.
Oh, okay. Well, thank God
35.
It's not your generation. Yeah. That's all that counts.
No.
This podcast is awesome because it focuses on young people under the age of 18 who have either found a recent discovery or created new businesses that are changing the game in different realms of STEM. And
wow.
I had so much fun interviewing these young people. They're brilliant. And it made me realize, like, what am I doing with my life? These kids are like 12 years old, making, incredible discoveries. And you're like, what?
Don't worry. Danny, don't worry. They're just peaking early. Okay.
Oh, okay. They're going to burn out later. Is that what you're saying?
By the time they're 26, they'll be washed up. I'm joking. No, joking.
So Danny, you're an ocean person, and I don't think we have enough of such people in this world. The ocean is, most of Earth's surface,
yes,
and so much we don't know. And frankly, space kind of siphons off a lot of what could be attention also given to Earth's surface. By surface, I mean including the oceans, Earth, the planet. And so you're founder of an ocean conservation organization. Who gets to say that, okay? Yes, you are accomplishing things, Danny. Stop using 12-year-olds as a metric for whether you've succeeded. So it's called Big Blue and You. So tell us about that.
Well, you know, I received my Bachelor of Science degree in marine biology back in 08 at the University of Miami. And that was my dream all throughout high school, was to study marine science. And then after undergrad, I realized, hey, like, there's a gap. There's a gap in information between the science community, specifically the ocean science community, and the general public. I grew up in Miami, and so I was constantly at the beach, in the ocean. I was certified as a scuba diver at 17. And I just knew that I wanted to spend as much time as possible in the ocean. But I also wanted people around me, my family, my community, to truly fall in love with the ocean like I fell in love with the ocean, because it's such an important, critical place for all humans on Earth.
But Danny, is it really true that with scuba diving, all of the instructions that you have to follow so that you don't die, rather than that you have fun? Is that true?
Well, it's semi-true, yes. It is a dangerous activity. And you can,
semi-true.
No, okay. It's very true. You need
also,
to...
Also, we shouldn't be surprised that, as a resident of Miami, people there have a front row seat in the behavior of the ocean.
Yes.
Right? I mean, not only with hurricanes, but you look at a map of the future sea level rise, and Florida's gone.
Yeah.
It's just gone.
Yeah. Gone. Underwater.
So is that part of the baptism that you experienced growing up?
Yeah. Well, excuse the term.
The baptism.
Oh, yeah. I guess so. Baptism is water. It does involve water.
As we talk about the submersion of all of Florida underwater.
Oh, my God.
Tell us about your baptism.
Well, you know, to be honest, when I was younger in high school, I didn't know as much as I know, as we know now, about climate change and the impacts of that. But I knew that things were not quite right. I looked at different areas like mangrove forests, the seagrass beds, places where I loved to explore as a kid, and I saw them changing before my eyes. Also, beach erosion happening around and different beaches that I loved to visit. So it became evident pretty quickly that I was like, okay, we've got some issues here, and we need to start spreading the word about what's going on out there. Because with the ocean, it's out of mind and out of sight for so many people, even people who live right there on the beach, and they don't recognize that under those waves, there's a whole other universe. I think of it as a universe. It's inner space that we still have so much
about. Careful
how
you use that word on this show.
I like that term. Whatever.
You need permission to use that word in that way. Could you tell us, this is something I learned. I was like a full-grown adult. And I said, what? Is that what they're called? These trees that grow at the intersection of land and waterways?
Mangroves.
They're called mangroves?
Yes.
Why? What does that even mean?
And why so sexist?
You know, that's a great question. I've never even thought about that, but I have no idea why they gain the name mangroves. But all I know is that they play an essential role in places like Florida and across the entire world around the tropical areas and regions, because they serve as a buffer. So whenever hurricanes come in, it's protecting the land. It's also a nursery ground for so many different marine species, including sharks and reef fishes. And it's where the babies grow up, and they're able to swim out to the reef after they've grown up. And so we need it desperately. And a lot of times we see in developed coastal areas where people want to build huge condos and hotels, we're seeing that...
Gotta cut down the mangroves.
They'll cut down the mangroves, yeah, because it's blocking the beach. In fact, Miami Beach, the beach that I grew up going to, is not a real natural beach. It's actually filled in with sand every 8 years and re-nourished. And it was formerly in the early 1900s, it was a mangrove forest along the coast, but it was removed to create the beach.
Wow.
Okay, so Chuck, I think mangrove should be a new haircut at the barbershop.
You know? Mangrove.
Yeah. Get my mangrove going here.
That's the man groom.
Groom me with the mangrove. You also have a lifestyle brand. Who does this? You have a lifestyle brand called the Mocha Mermaid. So what's up with that?
What? Totally.
Well, yeah.
I know, right?
Wait,
right?
You're a marine biologist and a black mermaid?
That's me. That's me in a nutshell. Yep.
Yo, that is dope.
That's totally dope.
That's
okay.
Thank you. I love it. Well, I've always been fascinated by the idea of being half fish or half marine mammal and half human. And you know,
that's called mentally disturbed.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is. The reason is that I have always wanted to be able to spend as much time as possible underwater, and being a mermaid or looking into that mythology. That's been seen throughout history, human history. Every culture around the world has had some type of ocean or water goddess, deity, whatever, in their mythology. And I think there's something to that. I love the story behind it. It began in Africa with like Mami Wata and different ideas in the religious practices that talked about these half water beings. Anyway, long story short, I like the idea of being someone who's connected to the ocean, who's constantly in the water. And I wanted to create a space for community building and to find other people that look like me, that have melanated skin, who also love the ocean, because we've been so underrepresented in this space throughout history. And now it's time, I think, for us to reconnect ourselves to water, because I believe that water is a healing element. It's something that, you know, whenever I get in the water, I immediately feel at peace, at rest, and I feel rejuvenated afterward. And I want other people to experience that, especially people of color.
Damn. Mm. Let's get back to the subject of why we have her on the show. And that's to talk about science pioneers, because you've written a book on science pioneers. And you told us offline that you began this during COVID, and it got published just a few months ago at the end of 2021. So I'm glad you did something productive during COVID, which is more than most people can say. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Instead of just binging on Rick and Morty, you actually wrote something. Right. So this is great.
Now, did you make sourdough? I mean, because if you didn't.
That was another one.
I'm not a baker. Yeah. I really don't bake that much, so no.
So who do you want to talk about first in that you've written about?
Well, I'd like to start with Vera Rubin.
Oh, I know Vera. She passed, but that's my field. Yeah. Bring her on. Yes.
Astronomy. Yes.
Yes.
She's amazing. She was born in 1928, and, you know, she did some pretty incredible things. She helps prove the existence of dark matter. She also used calculations to show that galaxies contain 10 times more dark matter than ordinary matter. And, you know, it's really considered one of the biggest and most important discoveries in astronomy.
Wow.
All in. So, Danny, if I could add that the implications of her discovery is that everything you see and know and love in a galaxy, the stars, the gas clouds, even the black holes and planets and moons and comets, all of that is froth on an ocean. Maybe you'll like this analogy, Danny.
I think I will.
The ocean, may I, yes. May I allow? You said universe before. I'm going to use ocean now. May I?
Okay. Sure, of course.
If actual matter is a small fraction of the total gravity in a galaxy, then everything we know and love is just froth on a wave that we cannot see.
That's a beautiful analogy.
Wow. We can detect it, you know, gravitationally, but we don't know what's causing it. So it's really dark gravity.
Hmm.
And so that discovery lives with us to this day, and it remains an unsolved mystery. And she was in the middle of it. So I heard tell that because she was sort of, you know, born in 1928 and in a scientific field certainly dominated by men, to get access to telescopes requires we have to apply, and then they have to sort of, someone in charge has to allow it. And you have stories about her trying to just use the same damn telescope everybody else was using. But so tell us about that.
Sure. Well, in 1965, she joined the Carnegie Institution for Science. And that was the very first time that a woman was allowed to use the Hale telescope at the Palomar Observatory. And this was a major step, because before that, women weren't allowed to do that. She, you know, she went.
Right, that's the biggest telescope in the world at the time.
Yes. Yeah. Mm.
How dare her want to use the biggest telescope in the world?
And I'm sure
she know her place.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Well,
I hope she said, clearly you guys are overcompensating for something. With this giant telescope.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
I feel that.
Go for it.
I feel that. Well, she had to work really hard to get to that point. Honestly, her career before even getting to that position was a journey. At first, you know, she wanted to do her degree in astronomy, her Bachelor of Science degree. Most schools wouldn't accept her. Finally, she got into an all-girls school, Vassar College, and she graduated. She was the only one from her class who graduated with a degree in astronomy. And then she went to Cornell, and then most other universities wouldn't accept her into their program because she was a woman. And then finally, Cornell let her, you know, join the crew. And then at age 23, she started pursuing her PhD, and she even had her first child while pursuing her PhD.
You know, that's badass right there, you know.
So badass, right?
let me pop out a kid while I'm discovering the universe.
Yeah, know? Try that, Einstein. Try that.
Exactly. And in fact, she ended up having four children successfully, you know, completing her PhD, and all this research and all these discoveries happening within her career alongside her husband, you know, and they just lived an amazing life. And it turns out that all four of her children ended up pursuing PhDs in STEM fields as well.
Wow.
And so what's this about bathrooms at the observatory? I heard rumors about this, but you got the untold story. What is that?
So the story about the bathroom issue with Vera was that there were no female bathrooms in the observatory. So what she ended up doing was taking a piece of paper and placed it right over the men's, symbol and made her own bathroom. And that, I think, was very significant in just the symbolism of it, where she made her place. She paved her own way and made sure that she had what she needed to pursue her dreams.
Wow. So let me ask you something. So for her to get to where she was required some kind of tenacity, all right? It's not putting up with status quo, but not being bitter about it necessarily. She just said, I'm doing this, try to stop me, right? And
exactly.
And I worry that sometimes people today, if it's a force operating against them, and then they just kind of lose it, right? And then they recede rather than continue to push to change the world, because it is not easy to change the world. There's always somebody who wants to prevent it. So this seems like a character trait that was very important for her to succeed.
Definitely. Tenacity is definitely the word that I would use to describe Vera, because she made a way when there was no way and figured out other alternatives for her to get to where she wanted to go. And I just love that about her. And again, she did it while raising a family, while doing everything that, you know, women, quote unquote, are traditionally known to do, while being a badass astronomer.
Wow. Right. And in my field, we do recognize discoveries, basically, you know, no matter who it is. And there's some lapses that occasionally need correction, of course, but today, Vera Rubin has a telescope named after her.
Yes.
But did you get to put that in? Because that happened only recently.
No.
Did that get it into your book?
It didn't make it in the book, but I did mention.
Oh, my God, because it just happened.
It just happened.
Oh,
I
you need like an addendum. Yeah, so wow. the current most powerful telescope in the world is named the Vera Rubin Telescope. And it's this humongous telescope. It has the largest digital camera ever built. Okay, it's the size of a human being, like the detector surface.
Wow.
All right, okay. And you just walk into this camera, and it's designed to take snapshots of the sky continually, which you can then stitch together and basically make a movie of the night sky. And the value of this is, just think about this. What have we been doing the whole, ever since we've had telescopes? Let's get one image in this one moment that I happen to be looking. But suppose something happens an hour after you shut off the telescope, or you're in the bathroom, or suppose something happened. Do you miss that? Or suppose something happens only in 24-hour increments. And so you see it, and you think it's natural, but it's only doing something for you in this 24-hour increment, and you're missing all the rest of the time. You can be biased by how the data has been obtained. So this telescope is called the Large Synoptic Survey Telescope. And that was too many syllables. I'm glad we renamed it, no matter who we renamed it to, but got to be renamed for Vera Rubin.
Nice.
And it's the Rubin Telescope. And when you're the name of a famous telescope, every discovery that comes out of it, your name is attached to
it.
Your
name is on to it.
Oh, yeah.
Well deserved.
Yeah. Well, that's a fitting legacy, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially because she never received a Nobel Prize, even though many of her colleagues did throughout her career. It's wild.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned it, that she discovered dark matter in galaxies.
Yes.
That would have clearly won a Nobel Prize. But it was sort of overlooked at the time by the Nobel Committee. And there are other Nobel Prizes that had gone to astronomers in the day.
Yes.
One of them went to the discovery of pulsars, to the man in charge of a project who didn't actually make the discovery. A woman did. Mm. Her name is Jocelyn Bell.
Wow.
So Jocelyn Bell is another one of these people who doesn't get
now you gotta make another book and put
exactly.
her
on. Exactly. Yep. I think we should do another one. Part two.
Hey, Danny, what are you doing on this show? Get the hell back to work.
Oh my gosh. I have so much respect for authors after writing my first book.
It's such an undertaking. Yeah.
Yes.
And so that Nobel Prize for the discovery of pulsars was for a discovery in the late 1960s. Her discovery of dark matter was in the early 1970s. So it was around the same time. But dark matter is still the longest unsolved problem in the universe.
Wow.
And we still don't know what's doing it. And she was in the middle of it.
And we can thank Vera for helping us pave the way. Love it.
Yes, yes.
That's fantastic.
All right. So you did good by including her in your book. When we come back, can you tell us more people in your book?
Absolutely.
And I assume they're not all from astrophysics, so I want to learn about other topics too.
Yeah, all over.
Excellent. We've got Danny Washington, who's recently written about pioneers in science. This is on Star Talk. We'll learn more about it in the next segment.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Hey, remember when we did that show about the science of the golf swing? Well, let's take that to the next level. And that's because PXG has developed the Black Ops driver so golfers don't have to sacrifice distance for forgiveness. And the science proves it. PXG Black Ops driver is a breakthrough in driver technology. It's a complete and total victory in golf club engineering, unlike anything you've ever seen before. Black Ops drivers are adjustable to deliver a combined MOI of 10,000 plus for unreal forgiveness. Now that's ridiculously high. The higher the MOI, the more forgiving the club will play. So you don't have to square the ball perfectly for it to go straight and get distance. Add PXG's new advanced material face technology, and you get incredible ball speed that pushes the distance to the absolute limits. More forgiveness, more distance, no sacrifices. PXG Black Ops driver. Hit your tee shot straighter and farther. The proof is in the science. Learn more and get free shipping on all equipment. Go to pxg.com/startalk and use code startalk at checkout. That's pxg.com/startalk. Use code startalk for free shipping on all equipment. pxg.com/startalk, code startalk.
Hi, I'm Chris Cohen from Haworth, New Jersey, and I support Star Talk on Patreon. Please enjoy this episode of Star Talk Radio with your and my favorite personal astrophysicist, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
We're back, Star Talk. We're talking about scientific pioneers over the last century. And I got someone who wrote a book on them, Danny Washington.
Hey.
And Danny, you did this. I mean, your background is in marine science, but you took on this project because you felt that there were some scientists who needed some attention, and somebody's got to do it.
Absolutely. Somebody.
And so we just came off of a segment talking about a pioneer in my field, Vera Rubin. But you also, tell me some more. You have someone from the field of medicine?
Yes.
Yeah, who do you have there?
Alice Ball. Alice Ball is a chemist. She was born in 1892, and she actually developed the first cure for leprosy, or also known as Hansen's disease, back at the age of 23 years old.
Okay, that's great, but if she's born in 1897 and discovered a cure for leprosy, that's too late for everybody in the Bible.
Way too late.
They had Jesus.
Well, they had Jesus.
It's okay.
It's true.
They had Jesus.
No church.
All right. Jesus was basically the whole entire health insurance policy.
Yep.
For everybody.
Of the entire biblical period. You know what I mean? It's just like my God, my skin is falling off. Put some Jesus on that. Okay. Ah, my leg. I got can't a walk.
Jesus.
Help me, I can't
Jesus.
Walk. Put some Jesus on that. Okay. Oh God, I can't see. Oh, come on. Let's. There you go. Put some Jesus on that. Put some Jesus on that. We good now. You good? You good? You good? You can see. You can walk. You can see. All right.
All right. So she's born 1892.
Yeah, 1892 in Washington.
And she did
State.
This when she was 23. Yes. Man.
Yeah.
That's badass right
so
there.
So badass.
So tell me about leprosy. I mean, I only, you know, it sounds like a, like we were saying, like a biblical disease. But what actually happens? Does anyone get it anymore?
Well, people do get it, but they're using more modern technology to help cure it. So they don't use what Alice Ball originally created. They have new pharmaceutical products that are helping. But her initial discovery of this specialized treatment really helped those suffering not to have to be put away into like a camp and like taken away from society. Now they can actually, they were able to function. And what I loved about it is that, you know, she did it through her own curiosity and figured out after researching kava root, she was at the University of Hawaii at the time. She was playing with kava root and then it moved on to this thing, a tree called the Chalmugra tree, which is in Hawaii. And then she distilled it down and then figured out if I inject this into the skin of someone suffering from leprosy, it'll actually heal the sores that end up coming up.
Wait. Stop. Who does this?
Exactly.
There's a tree. Let me extract this root, boil it down. Do you want to be a test subject? Right. Where does the thinking come from?
And who lets you do that?
And who lets you do that?
You know?
Well, so like, my arm's falling off. You inject anything into me. Right. My arm's going to fall off. Okay?
You know what? You got a point there.
There you go.
Right.
And so they put lepers in, for a long while, they put lepers in leper colonies, which is, right. sounds really.
It's depressing.
I mean, I don't know what else you do in the day, but yeah. still.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you don't want to have to do that going forward.
No. And the island of Molokai in Hawaii is where there was a specific peninsula where this colony existed. And it was sad because people would be taken away from their families and just living, right. you know, day to day. And it was just an awful existence. And so her pursuing this cure was world changing because so many people around the world suffered from this contagious bacterial disease.
Right.
Was she finally recognized for this work?
Well, you know what ended up happening was she passed away at the age of 24, tragically.
What?
Inhaled,
oh, my goodness.
What? Yeah. She just discovered the damn
and
thing.
I'm going to tell you, if you tell me she died of leprosy, I'm...
No, thank
goodness. Thank God.
No.
Go ahead.
She apparently accidentally inhaled chlorine gas in the lab. So it was a lab accident that ended up happening. And her advisor had to fight another of one of his colleagues who published a paper claiming that her cure was his method, the Dean method. And it wasn't until later in the 20th century that a librarian at the University of Hawaii saw that there was one Chalmugra tree on the campus. And she did some research, a little digging, figured out that Alice was the one who did all of this. And then finally, many years later, she got some recognition. The Lieutenant Governor of Hawaii declared February 29th Alice Ball Day in 2000.
Wow.
Cool.
Pretty well.
Cool. So wait. So that can't be every year then?
Oh yeah, because it's a leap year.
Not every year has a February 29th.
Which is kind of random. Yeah, I don't know why they would choose that day. I don't know if it was her.
Yeah, that's so random. Somebody should have checked out the calendar on that one because I would have. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so every 4 years we'll celebrate.
We'll celebrate Alice.
Alice.
Yes.
She's like the World Cup of scientists. That's cool.
Okay, every 4 years.
There we go.
It might make it even more special.
True that.
So, Danny, I've got a geeky calendar thing because it's one of my side avocations is thinking about calendars and whose calendar is accurate and who's. So, in the year 2100, that would normally be a leap year, but in the current calendar rules, it's not. So,
really?
Yeah, we'll not have a February 29th. So, we'll go 8 years without getting to celebrate her contribution. So, so we should just go back to Lieutenant Governor of Hawaii. And
I agree. That. Change a day. Make it.
Yeah, if you go there, tell him to call me. We'll straighten that out.
Whatever happened to the Dean character who sounds like such a dick?
I don't know. I didn't do much research about him. One of the other doctors who stole her cure claimed that it was his discovery, and it really was not.
Yeah,
really was not. Okay, well, that's all we need to know.
Yeah,
Okay. So, Danny, who else do you have?
Well, another scientist that I absolutely adore. She's a botanist born in India named Janaki Amal. So she's known as India's finest plant scientist, and she pioneered in the field of cytogenetics. And she even has two plants named after her.
Wait, what is cytogenetics? Don't go past that word and not explain it. Okay. Act like we all know what the hell you're talking about.
Listen.
Cytogenetics. What is that?
Cytogenetics. Well, you hear the word genetics in there, so it has to do with the study of chromosomes, but it also has to do with the role of chromosomes in heredity and things and traits that are passed down from different living organisms. So in her case, she was studying heredity within plants, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And she even developed a new strain, a new type of sugarcane in India that allowed more people, you know, to create more sugar products.
And when was she doing this now?
Lord, this is back in, she was born in 1897, so it was the early 1900s. Yes.
So she's a 20th century scientist. Okay.
Yes.
And that's pretty, I'll say, aggressive. Because, you know, right now, it's a shame. If she were alive today, she would have, like, the benefit of these supercomputers that we use now to map these things. She would probably be onto some super cool discoveries when you think about it.
She would be a rock star.
Yeah, definitely.
With all the tech we have now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible what she did with what she had. And, you know, she grew up in India. She had 19 siblings.
Okay.
So let me ask, what's this I heard that she stopped a dam? I don't even know what that means, but I heard this said of her.
Well, one of the most notable things she did in her career was she helped stop a hydroelectric dam at the Kuntipuza River, which is in her region where she grew up, because they were going to flood this area that was home to over 1,000 endemic plants that were found nowhere else in the world. And so she demonstrated her science and her activism just to serve environmental conservation, which is so important. It's something that we're still dealing with to this day, you know, trying to protect areas of this planet that are crucial for our health and stability in the future.
Or to even think that way, because most people, a dam will bring electricity. You know, you're not even thinking about the biodiversity of what you will end up flooding to make that happen. So for her to be on that page, that's brave and early.
But at least we'll have electricity that will allow us to see how badly we effed up.
There it goes.
We can turn the light on and see how badly we screwed things up. Isn't that great?
Take a look at that, sir. That's right. So, Chuck, that reminds me of a Gary Larson comic where there's this man and his son, and they just saw down this big, huge tree, and the tree. And you see the stump of the tree. And it says, look, son. It says something like, this tree ring was when it survived a hurricane. And this other one was when it survived. It's just
that's hilarious.
A wildfire.
Great.
Yeah.
To all the things
that it survived.
That the tree survived.
And that's really
great. Yep. And then you just cut it down.
You just cut it down.
I dig it.
Makes no sense.
Danny, I want on my business card to say, I've stopped a dam. That's just.
Yeah.
Right? A whole dam.
And
she spoke up for nature when nature didn't have a voice in our human experience, right? And what I love about her is also she talked about how, like, the biosphere in a lot of ways will go on with or without us. And I think that's something that's important for all of us to recognize. Maybe the environment will look different after we've altered it with our own selfish ways, but it's going to go on. Like, we're just going to wipe ourselves out if we continue on this path of destruction. But nature will come back.
Yeah, one day you'll see meerkats living in our condos.
All popping
their heads out the windows.
Well, you get meerkats. Of all the animals, meerkats. Okay.
That's a random idea. Choice.
That's somebody seen The Lion King too many times right there.
Got me.
Have you ever watched Meerkat Manor? That's like an awesome show. It's very dramatic.
But now I'm going to check it out because if you say check it out, I should check it out.
Meerkats, if they're anything, they're curious, right? Hey, what's that? Yeah. Did you see that?
Curious.
Oh my gosh, what's that?
Like, hey.
So what is phytogeography? I see that in my notes here.
Well, it's really just a mapping of where plants are located. And so she also did that with that area and helped establish the Silent Valley National Park in Kerala, India, in that same area. Man. So the place where they were going to flood, she made it into, and helped make it into a national park, which is incredible.
So let me just ask this about this. Well, Neil, you did it on Cosmos, but for either one of you, there was this episode that you talked about, this kind of Noah's Ark for seeds, where they take all the seeds from all over the world and put them someplace where they'd be safe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Noah's Ark is. No. I wanted live animals, not just seeds.
Right.
So it's kind of a broke-ass Noah's Ark.
So, Danny, what is in Norway?
So there's a seed bank that exists there where there are hundreds of thousands of seeds that we currently have on the planet being stored in case of an apocalypse. So that's basically, if an asteroid hits, do we have something to work with? And can we kind of replant the future?
But if it hits someplace other than Norway.
Other than Norway, correct. Right. That part is very important.
Well, it is. It's like the library in Alexandria. Let's put all the books in one library where they're safe. The library burns down, now you got nothing.
Nothing.
Right. So maybe we need two seed banks at antipodal sides of the Earth.
That would make sense. I like that idea. Yeah.
As long as you keep them away from Vladimir Putin, we're going to be fine.
We're totally going to be fine. Unless we had to just put it there or put it next to him or put it in Russia so that we know for sure nothing would happen. I don't know.
So you have the seeds, but you need things. So is a seed all you need to just restart civilization?
No, there is so much more. We live in this beautiful biosphere that has so many different moving parts. And I mean, just with plants alone, especially crop plants that we use for food, we need bees, we need pollinators, butterflies to help spread the pollen and actually continue the cycle. So we've got a lot of work to do, and it can't just depend us merely on the seeds.
Well, I saw an episode of Black Mirror where they had a bee drone.
Yes.
That.
Oh, I didn't see that episode.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
And because the show is called Black Mirror, things don't end well. but the idea was great. You know, you're running out of bees. Just invent a new kind of bee drone, and then there you have it.
By the way, there's a sequel coming out where every show ends happily. It's called White Privilege Mirror.
Whoa.
Instead of Black Mirror. Check. Here's your seat at the table, sir.
There you go. Everything turns out great for you.
Everything's got to be about being black with Chuck.
Come on. It's only because I live in America. That's all.
Right. Exactly.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more from Dani Washington. And we learn more about her and who she's written about in her book on scientific pioneers on Star Talk.
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Star Talk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
We'll be right back.
We're back, Star Talk. We got a really fun episode going here with Danny Washington, who's an ocean. Danny, what shall we call you if we gave you a title?
If you gave
marine
me a title,
biologist?
I have my marine biology degree, but I'm not a practicing biologist.
Marine biologist. Gotcha. And you also have a lifestyle moniker, the Mocha Mermaid.
That's right.
Okay.
That's me.
That to put both of those on your business card, that's all you need right there.
Every time.
And how do we find you on social media? What are your biggest platforms there?
Oh, my personal platforms, you can find me at Danny Washington on all Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
And Danny with an I. Yes, Danny Washington.
Thank you for clarifying. Yep. Danny with an I, two N's, and Washington spelled like the state.
Not two N's in Washington, but two N's in Danny.
Two N's in Danny, exactly.
Yes, okay. So Danny
Washington would be even better. Washington.
So this is for, and that is your handle for which platforms?
All platforms. So you can find me there. You can also follow my organization, Big Blue and You. It's a nonprofit out of Miami where I'm from. And we teach young people about the ocean through art and science combined. And we love it. It's Big Blue and You on all platforms as well.
Wait, and your podcast, which also reaches for younger audiences, I know what it is.
Yeah.
Chuck, figured this out.
I know what you're going.
She's going to be queen of the universe,
right?
Because she's training this whole next generation of people.
That's how
And then they will just follow her every command.
Yeah.
And then they take over the world and they get rid of us. Admit it here on Star Talk, Danny.
This is
your plan. Your master plan.
We found out your world domination plan, Danny. We caught you. We know what it is now.
Listen, I gave up on adults a long time ago. Okay, yeah. Kids are where it's at.
There you go. Yeah.
They know what's up.
I know this much. You've inspired me. You are the Mocha Mermaid. I am going to now be the Coco Comedian.
Coco Comedian. You're hilarious.
We got time for like one more person. Is there someone else who's like special to you?
Oh my gosh.
Profiled in this book?
Yes, my favorite. Absolutely.
And Chuck, I have to explain to Chuck. Chuck, when I say she profiled it, it's not a cop thing.
You know that's where I was going, Neil.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I just have to clear you. I just got to preempt Chuck's thing. Okay, so profiled in your book.
Yes.
Who else you have?
Dr. Sylvia Earle, who is my role model and mentor and someone that I respect.
Sylvia Earle. She's a friend of Star Talk. She's been on a couple of times, but many years ago. How's she doing?
Oh my gosh,
tell me about her.
She's wonderful.
Tell me what I don't know about her. Totally, just keep going. Totally. Bring it on.
I met her when I was 17 years old in Florida. I was at this National Geographic sleepover event at a museum. So random. But she happened to come because she's a resident explorer. And that was the first time we interacted in person.
Wait, just to be clear, has a title called Resident Explorer.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
So that's a great title to have. So keep going.
It really is. I mean, that was kind of like the cherry on top of her career because she did so much in her, you know, younger years as well as now. I mean, she travels more than 200 days out of the year to give talks and film a Netflix show. Like, she's done all these different things. But she was born in 1935 in Jersey, and then she moved to Florida when she was 12 with her family, and that's where her love for the ocean began. She's used to explore the coast and, like, dig through seaweed on the beach. We call the rack line and look for little invertebrates and things that were living in the seaweed. Would you do that, Chuck? Would you have joined Sylvia doing that?
I don't like sand, Danny.
No
I'm
sand?
Sorry.
Oh, no.
Chuck is still in New Jersey at this moment. He just
I
never
am
left
in New
Jersey.
Oh, right now.
But Chuck, imagine what kind of a great scientist you could have been had you moved from New Jersey.
If only you had left.
Yeah. Again, that reminds me of the Gary Larson comic where Jimi Hendrix is like ready to walk into an accordion store, and the store happens to be closed, but the guitar store next door is open. So then he goes into the guitar store.
That's pretty funny.
And it's titled "Disaster Averted."
Pretty funny.
Okay, so she moved to Florida and got ocean influence just the way you were.
This is
a fascinating commonality. Yes. So tell me more.
So she continued to follow that passion, and then she ended up going to Duke University for her master's in phycology, where she studied algae. She collected over 20,000 algae samples, which I believe she donated.
Called phycology?
No, phycology, like physics, phycology.
That's the first I've ever heard that word. Phycology?
That's it.
Is that for phylum or something? Like what is
phyto?
It?
Phyto. Yeah, I believe it's from phyto, but it's a study of algae and seaweeds in the ocean.
Algae, okay.
So awesome.
And algaeology never doesn't run off the tongue. So
no,
you got
not quite.
Okay. Algaeology. Okay, go on. Sorry I interrupted.
No worries. So yeah, she continued with that path. I think she donated her samples, I believe, to the Smithsonian, to the Museum of Natural History, that should be still there today. And then she became the first woman appointed as the chief scientist at NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the government agency who handles all things ocean and atmosphere.
Wow.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yeah, so she's a badass.
So she spends time, is she an underwater person or above water taking samples?
Well, we know her as her deepness. That's literally her title because she's logged thousands of hours underwater. In the 1960s, she led a team of all women, aquanauts, living underwater for 2 weeks, and that was the first time that ever happened. And it was just them underwater living for 14 days, doing research, not coming up to the surface. It was all self-contained. And she also holds the world record for the deepest untethered dive in history.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So how do you, if you're not tethered, how do you like come back up?
Well, she was in this special dive suit called a gym suit, and it was all, again, self-contained, and she operated it herself.
I have a gym suit. I could do that.
You could do that, too? Not G-Y-M.
I have a gym suit.
J-I-M.
J-I-M, sorry.
Yes,
sorry.
Yes. And so she womaned it. I'm not going to say manned it, but she womaned it herself and went down 1,200 feet. To be more specific, 1,250 feet on her own.
Wow.
Yep. Jeez.
That's in the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, by the way, NASA has addressed this issue of, is it a manned crew? So they just call it a crewed vehicle.
Crewed.
C-R-E-W.
Okay.
Crewed vehicle.
Yes, yeah. So right. So she crewed a vessel or an outfit down
outfit,
to the...
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's how NASA handles that. So you don't have to say woman.
There we go. She crewed it.
If you want to be gender neutral, yeah,
okay.
Sure.
Sure. It's a good idea. Yeah. But she's done so many incredible things in her life, you know, so far. And I see her on the road. Before COVID, I was going to a lot of summits and events related to ocean conservation, and she's usually always there. And I just love to hear her speak about her passion. She always speaks from the heart, but then throws in her science. And she's really become an icon in our space. For sure. And I just appreciate all the work that she's done to you know, not only for women in the space, but for everyone to recognize the importance of the ocean.
Mm. Now, we realize you like her, but has she accomplished anything?
Listen, she's accomplished so much.
Oh, we know. Oh, we know.
You should check out her Netflix documentary called Mission Blue.
Cool.
It's really good.
Okay. That's interesting because I think Disney had a ride called Mission Space. So this is using that same concept that you are on a mission. And now the mission is not only discover about the ocean, but do something about it because we are abusing it badly.
I mean,
so tell me about your conservation efforts and how they resonate with Sylvia's. Are you carrying the torch that she first lit in this space?
Well, I'd like to think that I am contributing to that. I know that there are a lot of other phenomenal female marine scientists out there and conservationists who are doing a lot of work. So we're in it together, you know. But Sylvia.
How humble of you. Just go ahead and take the credit.
Listen.
Just take the credit, Danny. You're killing it. You're killing it. It's okay.
You already exposed that she's going to be everybody's overlord very soon.
Exactly.
You know, the next generation will come up.
So what do you see as the most pressing issue right now when it comes to the care for our oceans? What is it microplastics? Is it the warming of the ocean itself? The acidification?
Chuck.
You know, is it our, you know,
our not more Chuck is just
listen,
showing
listen,
off.
You already you took
no,
the words out of my mouth.
He just showed off that he knows the vocabulary.
No. I'm serious. This is why I never get serious.
No, we love you, Chuck. Yeah. How do we prioritize?
Well,
this,
it's again, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, I talked about the fact that the ocean is out of sight and out of mind for many, many people around the world. But the ocean provides every other breath. The oxygen that's in every other breath, every second breath, comes from the ocean. And it also helps stabilize our climate on this planet. And so to answer your question, Chuck, I think the most pressing issue with the ocean is the warming of the ocean and the acidification. So two, really, kind of in tandem. Because, you know, without the oceans being in balance and stabilizing our climate, like, we're going to experience some extreme weather, which we already have been, right? We've seen it all over the world. But also the fact that it's acidifying, where there's too much carbon dioxide going in the ocean, it's messing up the balance, the chemical balance of the ocean, which causes things that build their shells underwater, like crabs, shrimp, but also coral reefs. They use the calcium carbonate out of the water to literally create their bodies. They can't do that when the water is acidic. And so that's one impact. But we can actually change it. And that's what I love about the ocean so much. It is extremely resilient. And if we give it time and space, it can bounce back in certain ways. It may not look the same as it looked maybe 20, 50, 100 years ago. We see that now. But I think the ocean can come back. And one of the solutions that I really lean on is blue carbon and looking at how we can establish more marine plants in the water that actually absorb that carbon dioxide. So I'm talking about kelp. I'm talking about mangroves. I'm also talking about seagrass beds. These are ecosystems that absorb carbon dioxide out of the water and the atmosphere 50 times more effectively than trees on land. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's the equivalent of like doubling forestry efforts, but you're doing it in the ocean itself.
Yes.
And plus the ocean is way big. There's a bigger tapestry on which to execute this.
Much,
right?
Much bigger, yeah.
So that could, so what you're, not to put words in your mouth, but I think what you're saying is if we cultivated an entire undersea forestry with whatever, I use forestry loosely there, because they do speak of kelp forests don't they?
Yeah, definitely. We call them sea trees.
Okay, excellent. So if we develop an entire underwater plant ecosystem, as it takes carbon dioxide out of the water, doesn't the ocean in response take carbon dioxide out of the air?
Yes, and that's what it's been doing for forever, right? That's why...
Right, because it tries to always stay in equilibrium. If there's a little less in one place, it donates it back in. So this can help fix the world that Chuck and I destroyed, that you and your future following, after you've rendered the rest of us extinct, can have a world that you
Exactly, a livable world.
It just dawned on me what Neil just said, which, of course, is a clear path towards decarbonization and an effective one. But the only motivation that could really accelerate that would be a commercial use for the byproduct. And so do you know of any, is there any kind of seaweed-based or kelp-based kind of product line that we could, and not just for your skin or something, you know, something
but
that has
Chuck, I got this. I'm done with kale, you know, I'm ready for the next thing.
Right.
And maybe it's kelp.
It's kelp. Right? It is kelp. Yes. It's so
kelp.
Extremely
nutritious.
Oh, it is.
Well, I'm just making that up. Oh,
wait,
okay,
is kelp nutritious?
It is. Okay, look. When we talk about...
Are you saying kelp is the new kale?
It is the new kale. It needs to be the new kale.
But Chuck, they're just going down the alphabet, you know?
Yes, oh, it's delicious. And actually, a few years ago, I remember filming a segment on one of the TV shows I hosted called Nature Knows Best, where we were looking at biomimicry. I interviewed a kelp farmer in Connecticut who was formerly a fisherman and was taking things out and now began growing and doing this 3D vertical farming model where he had mussels and clams and then he grew seaweed at the top. And so the kelp would grow toward the surface. And it only took a small area of the water. And he was that was his main subsistence, right? And people in New York City were ordering from him because they were making kelp pasta and all kinds of really cool dishes with kelp.
Wow.
It tastes delicious.
This is real.
It's real.
Wait, so what is the show? One of your shows you hosted. I can't keep up with them. I'm sorry. Which show was that so we can find it?
Sure. It's called Exploration Nature Knows Best. And it was we filmed in 2016 to 2018. And I interviewed tons of different people who were in biomimicry, in the space of biomimicry.
Cool. And where do we find that?
You can find it on Amazon Prime. It used to air on Saturday mornings on Fox networks around the country.
Oh, it's a series. It's a series.
It's a series, yeah. There's 27 episodes.
Oh my gosh. Right. Oh, that's great.
Yes.
Okay, cool. So you're a host of that. Okay.
I am, yes.
Wonderful.
And I've hosted several different productions.
Just while we're there, what precisely is biomimicry?
Biomimicry is the study of how we can take notes from nature and apply them to modern technology and design. And so there are inventors and scientists and engineers who are all doing that right now around the world, where they're looking at nature and looking at all the wonderful answers that have been solved, you know, the problems that have been solved within nature by nature. Why aren't we taking notes? And why aren't we mimicking what nature is already doing?
We did it with flight.
So. Exactly.
We did it with flight.
So,
yes.
So you're saying we're not clever enough to do this on our own. We need tips from nature who has been at it for 4 billion years. Correct. That's what you're saying.
Yes. Oh, I think it would be, it's due time that we start paying attention to the world around us, right? Mm. What a concept.
Yeah. Excellent. So, well, I got to start landing this plane. Let me just ask you some final questions here. This is very cool.
Thank you. Wait a minute.
Everyone you talked about was a woman.
Ooh. What a surprise.
What's the title of your book?
The title of my book is Bold Women in Science.
Well, that explains it.
There it is.
Okay. You found them in the ether.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes.
Well, cool.
It's 15 different biographies of women throughout history, including women that are still with us today, including, I'm sure she's your friend, Mae Jemison is in there. I have her.
Yeah, Mae. Yeah, I mean, Mae go way back.
Of course, yeah.
Mae Jemison, a pioneering astronaut.
Yeah. Phenomenal.
A shuttle era astronaut.
Yeah. So it's a fun book for everyone. It's meant technically for 8 to 12 year olds, but listen, you could sit down and read this in an hour and like enjoy it and learn a little something new about some women who made some phenomenal contributions to science.
Well, every one of us knows an 8 to 12 year old somewhere in our family or a friendship. And that's the age where, oh my gosh, they're not weirded out yet from middle school.
Yep.
And
the hormones still haven't kicked in.
Aren't interfering. Oh my gosh.
I wish I had this book when I was a kid, literally. And that's the reason, and the main reason that truly motivated me to write it was because I knew this is something that if I had had this at 8 years old, like, ooh, it would be
The world domination.
You might have studied oceanography. You might
world domination.
No, but you already did.
It would be so complete. It would be complete faster. How about that?
Faster. There you go. Yeah, we would have been having this interview and you would be 18 years old instead of whatever you are today, right?
It
would have been accelerated progress.
Absolutely.
In the arc of life. Very, very cool.
So, yeah.
All right. So, Danny, thanks for sharing your time and your expertise and your reflections on something that not enough people think about in this world. We need more of that. And I hope this is not the last time you'll be on Star Talk, because this topic comes up all the time. And plus, we got to have a whole conversation on just ocean conservation unto itself.
I'm game.
Right? This one we focused mostly on your book, but there's so much more out there. And what do we do with our plastic?
That's a big one. We'll hold you
entirely accountable for that. Mm-hmm. Okay. For the solutions there.
Okay, you're holding me accountable. All right, I'll bring some solutions. I got it. Listen.
Yeah, that's right.
I've got them. I work with a lot of great people who do too. So, yep.
Excellent. All right, Danny. Great to have you. Chuck, always good to have you on Star Talk.
Always a pleasure. Always.
Neil deGrasse Tyson here, your personal astrophysicist. As always, keep looking up.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently. At capella.edu.